This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Mayor Newsom wants to be governor of California. Governor Perry may want to be president of Texas. Congress returns with just still one senator from Minnesota. It's Wednesday and time for another visit with the political junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Lipstick.
But I'm the decider. Ah!
On Wednesdays, NPR political editor Ken Rudin joins us to talk politics. Democratic Congresswoman Jane Harman calls for a release of her wiretaps. Vice President Cheney calls for a release of waterboarding results. We'll focus on the fallout from the declassification of the so-called torture memos in just a bit. Later in the program, Dan Deacon joins us from NPR West. But we begin, as always, with a trivia question. And political junkie Ken Rudin joins us here in Studio 3A.
Hi, Neil. I just got, nothing. Ignore that. We just got something in my ear with a new answer to the trivia question.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. But the last two, then. Well, this is very interesting. It changes everything. But we did have a trivia question at one point.
Well, now it doesn't look so pointed, does it?
I'm so stunned. And as a matter of fact, the question was from, I'm not going to blame it on me. I'll blame it on Tom Miller of Tucson, Arizona, who sent this question in. The last senator who was born in Havana, but as it turns out, there was somebody since that senator.
The last two senators born in Havana. And boy, you're going to have to pay up big for this one. Boy. The winner, of course, gets a fabulous no prize T-shirt. But if you think you know the answer, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Yikes. Email us, talk@npr.org. The last two senators to be born in Havana. Ken, of course, we always begin traditionally every year on this program with the question, what's happening with the Minnesota Senate election?
Well, actually, every week it seems like there is incremental news, and there is latest news is that Norm Coleman, who had the seat for one term, gave it up in January 3rd when his term expired. He lost the decision by the three-judge panel saying that no, Al Franken did have the most votes. 312 more votes, to be exact. And so Norm Coleman has taken his appeal, as expected, to the state Supreme Court, where he could either lose and go on to whatever he decides, or win, and then it gets even more messier, to quote the New York Rangers. But my scenario from the beginning is that the Minnesota Supreme Court rules the same way as the three-judge panel, and then
Coleman will have to decide whether to take that to federal court or not. But
either way, I suspect that there will be a move to
see Al
Franken, who has begun to hire staff.
So he's beginning to think, yes, it's going to happen one of these days. Another cliffhanger, of course, is the the House race in the New York 20th. What's happening there?
Well, that also looks bad for Republicans, probably even worse, just as bad, I should say. Scott Murphy, the Democrat, right as of we speak now, has a 273-vote lead over Republican Jim Todisco. Todisco is not giving up. Of course, Tom Davis, the former chairman of the National Republican Congressional Committee, former congressman from Virginia, said it's over, forget it. He's toast. But the Republicans are going to continue to fight that. It looks like the Democrats will win that, and it may not even go to court.
So that one could be decided when?
Soon. I suspect that could be in a matter of a days, if not a week, whereas we don't know how long it'll take in Minnesota. But New York 20 looks like this is a seat that Kirsten Gillibrand gave up. It looks like it will stay in Democratic hands.
And now we have finally at least a Senate vote scheduled for the nominee to be the HHS secretary, and that's Kathleen Sebelius.
Right. She is the governor of Kansas. Yesterday, the Senate Finance Committee voted 15-8, only two Republicans voting on her behalf. A lot of Republicans, or at least the eight Republicans who voted against her, are complaining that she didn't tell the truth about abortion money from a late-term abortion doctor that went to her campaigns. She said, no, it was an oversight, blah, blah, blah. There's some question whether either there will be a Republican filibuster on the nomination, or it's just the beginning of a Republican opposition to whatever health policy President Obama comes up with, because Kathleen Sebelius would be in charge of that policy.
And we think we have some people who know the answer to our trivia question. The last two senators to be born.
What an auspicious beginning that was.
In Havana, as our political junkie Ken Rudin was found dazing off into the distance as the program began. Anyway, let's see if we can get a caller on the line. This is Sean. Sean with us from Hopewell in New Jersey.
Yes, good afternoon. It's the most recent senator would be Bob Menendez from New Jersey, and prior to him, Mel Martinez from Florida.
Well, Bob Menendez of New Jersey was born in that tropical island of Manhattan. He is a son of Cuban immigrants, but Menendez was born in Manhattan. And as far as Mel Martinez, he was born in Sagua La Grande, Cuba, 1946, but he was not born in Havana.
Not born in Havana.
So 0 for 2.
Nice try, Sean.
All right.
I thought you were going to go for Orlando Hernandez, but of course he wasn't senator. He was Duque. Anyway, let's see if we can get another answer here. And let's go to, this is Gabriel. Gabriel with us from Dover in New Hampshire.
Well, I said Mel Martinez from Florida and Senator McCain from Arizona.
Well, McCain was born in the Panama Canal Zone, actually, to American parents, and that's why, you know, he probably would be eligible to run for president because it was American parents.
Right. And, of course, it was very dry in those days. It was arid zone. Anyway,
sense of humor joke.
Gabriel, thanks very much for the call. Email from Brad in San Francisco who says Mel Martinez. We know that to be wrong. And John Sununu.
John Sununu is the reason we were a little distracted at the beginning of the show because John Sununu, the former senator from the former governor of New Hampshire.
Right. And former senator.
His son was a senator.
Ah, okay.
But John Sununu was not a senator. He was a senator. I'm sorry, this is very strange.
Very strange, yes.
But anyway, John Sununu was born in Havana.
And we're going to get a political expert in here pretty
soon.
Yeah. He was born in Havana. But that's the southern part of New Hampshire.
Right. But John Sununu actually is, I believe, a Lebanese-American. I think he is.
I think that's right.
But there is another senator who was born in Havana.
All right. So we're not mentioning. Actually, we're kind of back to our original political junkie question now. And that's the last senator besides John Sununu to be born.
And by the way, I'd like to announce next week there will be a new political junkie person here because my career is over.
Striking out. Anyway, if you think you know that, give us a call, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. Speaking of Havana, though, the president of the United States was at the Summit of the Americans in Trinidad, where relations with Cuba were topic A.
Yes, and there is pictures of, first of all, there is remarks made by Raul Castro that Fidel Castro has apparently disassociated himself from, saying that they were misinterpreted, but there was a famous smiling handshake with Hugo Chavez, the president of Venezuela, and in the Latin American press, President Obama and the United States got tremendously positive reviews. Republicans said, no, this is not what you want to do. It's not the kind of portrayal
image you want to do with these
dictators. So the politics remains in this country as well.
Jane Harman, a congresswoman from California, is now at the center of a scandal where apparently she was wiretapped talking with two lobbyists from AIPAC, the American Israeli Political Action Committee, and at least according to reports, striking a political deal.
Well, actually, there's a lot of confusion about this, but apparently what happened is that the NSA, with an authorized wiretap during the Bush administration, was tapping the phone of a suspected Israeli spy who was on the phone with Jane Harman, and Jane Harman was saying, I will go to bat for these two AIPAC lobbyists, the American-Israeli Political Action Conference Committee, who would, and she'd go to bat for them to get some lenient treatment by the Bush administration if somebody could do something on her behalf, and that is make her the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee when the Democrats take control of Congress in 2006. Jane Harman, on All Things Considered last night with Robert Siegel, denounced the NSA wiretapping. She said she's outraged. It's a disgrace the way people are being behaved and treated.
And we have a clip of tape of her response to one of Robert's questions.
These are selective leaks. They are allegedly quoting me, maybe out of context, based on transcripts that these people say they've seen. I didn't even know there were transcripts.
And these, of course, were, if they were part of the Bush administration's warrantless wiretaps program, that would have been something that would have been, approved by Jane Harman.
Exactly. That's part of the irony here is that Jane Harman, among the few Democrats who went along with the Bush administration's policy, Jane Harman was perhaps one of the leading Democrats. And if you listen to that interview last night, there was a lot of non-denials, and it was just very interesting to see how she answered many questions. I suggest that people who were critical of either our coverage of it or Jane Harman's answers go and listen to that interview.
And you can find that at NPR.com, where apparently some guy named the Political Junkie... .org. Some guy named the Political Junkie writes a Political Junkie column every week. Blog until recently. Apparently John H. was the governor, so our original...
Wait a second. We are correct? Oh, I'm so happy. See, let me just explain to the listener back home that in my ear, they said, no, John Sununu was born in Havana, Cuba. But John Sununu was the governor of New Hampshire, not the senator who was his son, who was not born in Havana.
Was born in New Hampshire, presumably. Let's not go out on a limb there. Anyway, there is another senator who was born in Havana.
The last one.
The
last senator.
The last senator
to be born
in Havana. Let's see if we can get some answers on this. Let's see if we can go to Josh. Josh with us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yes, sir. Was it Max Baucus from Montana?
No, Max Baucus was not born in Havana. Nope, that's not correct.
Okay, nice try, Josh. Let's see if we can go instead to this is Lisa. Lisa with us from Cape Coral in Florida.
Hi there. I think it might be the Diaz-Balart brothers.
Well, Lincoln Diaz-Balart was born in Havana. He's a congressman. And his brother Mario Diaz-Balart was born in Fort Lauderdale, but neither one served in the Senate. They're both in the House of Representatives.
Are they related to Castro?
Actually, Lincoln Diaz-Balart's family was, I think there was some relation, and he was hoping to be the successor to Castro. His family was hoping to be successor. That's a fascinating story, but again, not the guy we're looking for.
Nice try, though.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye. And let's see if we can go now to Robert. Robert Withers from New Bedford, Massachusetts.
I think that I have an answer that satisfies your requirements.
Uh-oh.
Camilo Pascual.
Camilo Pascual was a senator who was born in Havana, but not a United States senator, a Washington senator.
Do we want the answer?
Oh.
Go ahead.
I hear the music. So the answer actually is Scott Lucas of Illinois, who was born in Havana, Illinois.
Robert, you can groan now.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for the call. We're going to have to give away two T-shirts next week. Ken Rudin, stay with us. We're going to be talking about the politics of the torture memos when we come back. Stay with us. Talk of the Nation, NPR News.
Talk about torture.
This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. There have been more than a few political ramifications to the Obama administration's decision to release the so-called torture memos. Senator Dianne Feinstein, the chairwoman of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, has asked the president to refrain from commenting on holding individuals accountable for detention and interrogation-related activities until her committee is able to complete its review of the condition and interrogations of certain high-value detainees. Senator Feinstein estimates the study could be complete within the next 6 to 8 months. Well, joining us now is NPR congressional correspondent David Welnett. David, how are you?
I'm fine, Neil. Hi.
Nice to have you with us today. And this
Thank
is,
you.
I think, to put it mildly, been a hot topic on Capitol Hill the last couple of days.
It is sizzling up here. And, of course, we'd remind listeners that Congress has actually just gotten back from a 2-week break. They were out of town last Thursday when the Justice Department released the 4 memos that provided a legal basis or a rationale for the severe interrogation techniques that were used by the CIA and apparently by the military as well. So lawmakers got back. The House only got back yesterday. And, of course, many of them had immediate reactions. And the big question here isn't so much whether something more should be done. I think there's quite a large consensus that something more should be done. But who should be doing it, and how should it be done? And they're struggling with that right now.
Monday, the president made his first visit to Central Intelligence Agency headquarters in Langley, Virginia, and said that he was opposed to the idea of holding those CIA interrogators, people who operated under the cover of what they thought were those legal memos. He was opposed to holding them accountable for what they did. Here's what he had to say.
With respect to those who formulated those legal decisions, I would say that that is going to be more of a decision for the Attorney General within the parameters of various laws, and I don't want to prejudge that.
And then today, David Wellner, the Attorney General, Eric Holder, said to reporters, "We're going to follow the evidence wherever it takes, follow the law wherever it takes us. No one is above the law," though he then reiterated that the department has no intention to prosecute CIA interrogators who acted in good faith in following official legal guidance. Ken?
David, for the longest time, President Obama was talking about that we should look forward, we should not look back. Rahm Emanuel, his chief of staff, said on Sunday that no prosecutions are expected. Something changed. There was some kind of pressure put on President Obama. What do you think that was?
I think its name is the U.S. Congress. I mean, up until Sunday, there really hadn't been much of a presence of Congress around Washington. The Obama administration was really the only game in town when these memos came out. Actually, President Obama himself was out of town in Mexico and then at the Summit of the Americas. The timing of that memo coming out, I don't think necessarily had to do with the fact that Congress was away and that the president was traveling, but those were all good things if you didn't want to have a big stir made. It was more that there was a lawsuit. The American Civil Liberties Union was suing for the release of those memos, and last Thursday was the deadline for releasing them. And it wasn't so much a question whether they were going to be declassified and released. It was a question of how much was going to be redacted from those memos. And President Obama opted for actually revealing virtually everything that was in those memos. Very little was blacked out in them. But in some ways, he had it both ways. He came out on the side of transparency, but he came down on the side of not delving further into the legal responsibilities involved here, at least when it comes to the CIA. Now, Neil, you mentioned Senator Feinstein, the chairwoman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, and she said that the president should not leap to judgments on who was responsible or who should be judged. She wants to finish the work of her committee first and find out, in fact, if there were more people responsible than are being pointed to right now. And in fact, they're looking at the actual circumstances of every sort of high profile interrogation that was done and deciding whether, in fact, the strictures that were put forth by the Office of Legal Counsel at the Justice Department were, in fact, followed by the CIA interrogators.
And Vice President Cheney, former Vice President Cheney, has weighed in saying, look, if you're going to release these secret, once secret memos, you should also release the information that was disclosed by these interrogations. Let's listen to Vice President Cheney on Fox News.
Up till now, I haven't talked about it, but I know specifically of reports that I read, that I saw, that lay out what we learned through the interrogation process and what the consequences were for the country. And I've now formally asked the CIA to take steps to declassify those memos so we can lay them out there and the American people have a chance to see what we obtained and what we learned and how good the intelligence was, as well as to see this debate over the legal opinions.
So we want to hear from listeners today. Do you want answers from a 9/11 style commission? Do you want indictments or do you want nothing at all? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. And of course, Ken Rudin is still with us, NPR's political editor, our political junkie every Wednesday here on Talk of the Nation. And David Wellner, congressional correspondent for NPR, with us from Capitol Hill. And let's see if we can go to Brian. And Brian's with us from Grand Rapids in Michigan.
Good afternoon, Neil. I'd like to see a 9/11 style commission set up of independent judges or Congress people, maybe from both sides, bipartisan, so that we can show the world that we are a nation of laws and that the laws will be upheld.
David Wellner, the president certainly seemed to be edging in that direction yesterday as he spoke from the White House talking about a bipartisan investigation that would not get caught up in the politics that can so often come out in committee hearings.
That's right. And in fact, this has already been proposed on Capitol Hill. Senator Patrick Leahy, who's the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, actually held a hearing about 6 weeks ago looking into what he called a nonpartisan commission of inquiry. That hearing attracted only two other Democrats on the committee and two Republicans, and it seemed to be going nowhere. In fact, President Obama was asked at his first press conference at the White House about Leahy's proposal for such a commission, and his response was, "My view is also that nobody is above the law, and if there are clear instances of wrongdoing," I'm quoting him now, "that people should be prosecuted just like any ordinary citizen, but that generally speaking, I'm more interested in looking forward than I am in looking backwards." We've heard that refrain before. Now, it's interesting that yesterday he seemed to hold the door open to that kind of independent commission, not made up necessarily of members of Congress, going forward. I think he's feeling a lot of pressure from Congress to give a green light to this, and they're looking to him to sort of give his blessing to it.
And, Brian, thanks very much for the call. Though Republicans are, steaming, I think is fair to say. This is Senator John Cornyn of Texas.
To sit quietly and to let this happen and then come back later and say people ought to be prosecuted criminally, not just here in the United States, but perhaps internationally, to me is inconsistent, to say the least.
Inconsistent with saying we should be looking forward and not looking back was what he was talking about there. And David Wellner, I guess the international part comes in. The United States signatory to the treaty against torture, and there are plenty of Europeans saying if the United States is not going to investigate this, we will.
Yes. In fact, they would have legal grounds to demand an international investigation of these alleged acts of torture if the United States doesn't act. And so this is putting more pressure on U.S. Courts or possibly the Justice Department to look into this. And it's actually bolstering the argument of Democrats on Capitol Hill who are saying that something more should be done. If we don't do it, then you're going to have this international spectacle where it's not necessarily the case that they would get any of these people they're going after to come into the courts in Europe. But they may be barred from any kind of international travel because they could be arrested if they went to those countries.
Well, let's get another caller on the line. This is Andrew. Andrew with us from Citrus Heights in California.
Hello.
Hi there.
I just wanted to say that, I mean, if anyone should be punished, it should be Dick Cheney and President Bush. They're the ones that push for this torture. And I think we should do nothing right now because the damage is already done and we got a better administration in right now. And we don't need to be looking at the past. We need to be looking at the future. The people in the lower end of the government, the people that work for the CIA, should not be punished for what the higher-ups told them to do. They were simply just fulfilling their job. And if there's any indictments to be made, it should be on Dick Cheney and President Bush. And if that's going to happen, then fine. But realistically, that's never going to happen. So there should be nothing done.
Hi, could I jump in there? Because I actually was in Argentina in the 1980s, where I first covered a military dictatorship that had come to power with a promise of doing away with domestic terrorism. Some 30,000 people disappeared during that dictatorship. And when the civilian government took over, one of the first things the new civilian president did was to say, we are going to put the military leaders on trial. They did that 2 years later. And 2 years after that, they found them guilty, too. There was a military uprising that forced the president to sort of backtrack on all that he had done. Now, you know, you can say that maybe that was a real lesson for the dangers of going after high leaders. At the same time, in Argentina, they're saying today that there was a real moral lesson for anybody who followed, that if you do these things, I'm not comparing what happened in the Bush administration necessarily to what happened in Argentina, of course, but there is the same impulse to look to the people at the very top and say, you were the ones who are pushing for these policies. You're the ones who are going to have to answer for them.
And Ken, there's a political lesson to be drawn, too. There will be, I'm going to go out on a limb here, another president, a Republican president in the United States, another Republican Congress in the United States, and well, if these Democrats are going to be indicting Republicans, there's going to be payback.
Well, that exists no matter what's happening, and it's unfortunate. But one thing I wanted to ask David, though, the quote, the memo by Dennis Blair, the director of intelligence, who said that it says some value, some information was obtained from these methods. Now, of course, he backtracked a little bit on that, but that's basically the Cheney argument, and this is President Obama's director of intelligence. Does the Blair memo hold any weight on Capitol Hill?
Well, Blair has actually backed off a bit from that statement.
Probably under pressure from the administration, though.
Yes, that statement came out last Thursday, although it was not included in the actual press release at the time. The full statement only surfaced yesterday. But Blair also said, you know, I would like to think that had I been in a position to make a decision at the time, I would not have approved this, despite having said that they got valuable information. Now, the question is whether that information could have been obtained through other means that were far less dire than the ones that were used. And Philip Zelikow, who was a counselor at the State Department in the Bush administration.
And an important member of the 9/11 Commission.
Exactly. Argued strenuously against using these enhanced interrogation techniques. And he told Andrew Mitchell on MSNBC today that, in fact, he wrote a memo arguing against this, subsequently there were efforts to suppress this and do away with the memo entirely. He said, you know, in effect, he was saying this was all overkill. We could have probably found out a lot of this information using other means.
There's another aspect of this. One of the people, those lawyers who wrote these memos that were disclosed, is now a federal judge, Jay Bybee, and there are calls specifically for impeachment proceedings against him.
That's right. And in fact, impeachment is the one legal action that Congress can take in response to these memos that have come out, because Bybee is a federal judge. The House could impeach him and the Senate could then try him. And in fact, there are calls in the House to go ahead with that. Senator Leahy, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, said that he thought that it would be the decent and honorable thing for Bybee to simply resign at this point. He didn't endorse necessarily the idea of impeachment. But Bybee was nominated by President Bush to be a federal circuit judge on the Ninth Circuit Court in May of 2002. He did not author that memo that became so infamous, the August 1st, 2002 memo that gave really a legal basis for these techniques. He authored it then. He had his confirmation hearing in February of 2003, and at that hearing, he was asked whether there were any findings that he had authored at the Office of Legal Counsel that he should share with the committee, and he simply said, no, these are things that I can't share with you.
Because now, they were top secret at the time.
Well, right. If they were classified, he could not share them with them. And so they made this decision to confirm him as a federal judge and found out later, this is a lifetime appointment, by the way, they found out later that, in fact, he was the author of this memo that was disavowed by the Bush administration in June of 2004. They repudiated it, but this man continues to sit on the court.
David Wellner, NPR congressional correspondent, also with us, Ken Rudin. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get a caller in. This is Dan, and Dan's with us from Chicago.
Hi.
Hi, Dan.
I'm a former Army interrogator, and I don't believe that a 9/11 style commission is the way to go. I think it's just going to result in a lot more arguing that's not going to get anything done. I think we need to have investigations and potential prosecutions of the people who came up with this policy, which I believe perpetrated a fraud. We are signatories to the Torture Convention, and these people put interrogators at risk in addition to the nation's security.
And somebody would say, Dan, and so the Nuremberg defense, I was just following orders, is okay for the interrogators?
I think that these guys were given documents that made it look okay. I mean, in interrogation school, we're all taught that the Geneva Convention is law. The Uniform Code of Military Justice, soldiers, people serving in the military have an obligation to disobey an unlawful order. But if people on the line are presented with documents that appear to be legal and give justification, they have no other choice.
All right. Dan, thanks very much. Appreciate it. Sure. Let's see if we can go this is Matt. Matt with us from Kitty Hawk, North Carolina.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
I think we should... I think a commission would be a waste of taxpayers' time and money, and I think that there are a lot of issues involved in this that are beyond the scope of those of us who haven't dealt with it to understand.
So we should do nothing?
I think we should move on and try to prevent this sort of thing from happening in the future, but I think at this point we can't rectify this situation.
And, thanks very much, Matt. And one of the aspects, if there is a 9/11-style investigation, if you expect people to cooperate with that, the understanding is that they would not be indicted in return for their testimony. Correct, Ken?
That's absolutely correct. And but there was also some problems with the 9/11 Commission, too, that the rhetoric back and forth, the partisanship, that didn't disappear, even though respected people like Lee Hamilton, Tom Kaine were heading it. So there's no way to get politics
and
out.
And a lot of people were, there were a lot of accusations about what happened before 9/11, but there was no suggestion that crimes were committed.
That's correct.
All right,
and
so.
there's also the concern, too, with the commission, whether they would have subpoena power and whether they would have access to many classified documents that they'd have to see. There's another suggestion from Senator Carl Levin, the chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, which just came out with its report on these interrogations. And he says that he would like to see a group of people, perhaps retired federal judges who are sort of above the fray, advise the Justice Department on where to go with all this, something outside of Congress and something much closer to the Justice Department to sort of keep it above politics.
David Wellner, thanks very much for your time today. This is a story that looks like it's going to run and run. Appreciate it.
Welcome.
David Wellner, NPR congressional correspondent with us from Capitol Hill. Ken Rudin, NPR's political junkie, with us here every Wednesday. And one of these days we'll get the trivia question right. And we'll join us again next Wednesday. You can read his blog at npr.org. Coming up, we're going to be talking with musician Dan Deacon, who's touring the country, and he'd love to take that tub of vegetable oil off your hands to get to his next gig. Stay with us. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.